Connor Orr. We're here with Bette Marson, Gary Gramling today. That starts with a lesson in geopolitics. Before we switch over to the movie, we have the Wikipedia page for the former Republic of Yugoslavia up here. We're watching the Disney classic Gus today, in which a mule, field goal kicking mule, is imported into the United States to help a ragtag football team win the Super Bowl. I had a FIFA 93 where it was Yugoslavia, or FIFA 92 or something for Sega Genesis. Then it was Serbia and Montenegro, and now it's Serbia, Montenegro, right?
Yes.
Do we feel good about that?
I feel good about that.
Yeah, as long as you guys do. As long as I have other people to share the blame with, sure.
Based on Google Maps, which I'm looking at the moment, we have Serbia, we have Montenegro. They're next to each other, but they appear to be separate entities, so... If we're incorrect on that, someone let us know.
This was like this is like 70s Disney, right? And so I think that what we've learned is like it's a lot different than 1990s Disney or 2000s Disney. It's a little bit rougher around the edges. I have screened Gus as per instructions from podcast czar Scott Brody. I'm ready to stand on the table and defend the beautiful nature of this film. It's gritty. There are certainly some violent undertones here, some romance. What are your initial thoughts on just the idea of this movie, Gus?
I'm pretty excited about it. I mean, I always like a worst first story, which I kind of think this might be. I actually don't know. I know they're the worst because based on the IMDb page, it says they are by far the worst team in the league and have not won a single game in years. Their cheerleaders are fat and ugly, and even the marching band is awful.
Oh, no.
So, a great start. I've only read the first two paragraphs, so here we are. But I don't know. Gary, what do you think?
Yeah, I have no idea what I'm getting into. I had not heard about this movie until yesterday. I wasn't even sure we were going to watch it for bad football movies. I thought... and I didn't know it was a Disney film. I thought it might be like a Werner Herzog documentary here about a field goal kicking mule. But
yeah, Connor, I have a question. Is this the oldest movie that we've watched?
This is the oldest bad football movie. A title that used to be held by All the Right Moves with Tom Cruise, which you watched from 1983. And so I think that needs to be taken into account here. We don't have one of our normal co-hosts here, Mark Mravick, who loves to rail against production value and soundtracks. And so I think that we can just try to keep an open mind here. Let's embrace it for the sort of the rustic old ragtag sports comedy that it is. One question before we all get started. What is your favorite animal doing sports like movie or genre here? Because I feel like we should acknowledge this as one of the godfathers of that genre.
Who am I allowed to say? Air Bud? Like, is that,
I feel like Air Bud? Yeah, I think you could take Air Bud.
I mean,
yeah,
Air Bud Golden Receiver is a great one. I feel like someone threw that movie out as a bad football movie at one point, but we've just been kind of hanging on to it, keeping it in our back pocket for a rainy, you know, midweek whatever podcast viewing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Big fan of Air Bud.
I don't know if I like any animals turning towards me. I mean, I'm writing my own screenplay about the elephant who golfs, but other than that, I don't know if there's one out there. I remember, what was the Matt LeBlanc one with
yes,
the chimpanzee who plays baseball?
Yes.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
I vaguely remember that and not liking it.
Was that at the height of Friends, too?
Oh, it must have been. I don't know when else he would have gotten that job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Ed.
Oh, Ed, there you go, Ed.
It's literally just called Ed.
Must have been inspired by Gus. You have a one syllable name
to Gus. Yeah. Yeah, I would say, I mean, when Air Bud came out, I mean, that was right in my wheelhouse. I think I was like 7 or 8 years old. Enough to really feel like, I don't know how. Have you seen Air Bud with your kids?
No, I've never seen any of the Air Buds.
Have you seen the original Air Bud, like the basketball?
Yeah, that's Air the one Bud that I like the most. I think I've seen Golden Receiver once, and the other ones, the soccer ones, and the
you've
ones
never
where
seen
they,
World Pup.
No, I've not seen World Pup. The ones where like is that the one where he has puppies and there's all the, they make a, I don't know.
I think they've form like a, it's like 101 Dalmatians kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm partial to the original Air Bud and the Golden Receiver.
When they make the dog choose between the boy, there's like a federal court case around the ownership of this basketball playing dog. And like the penultimate sequence in this movie is the child who loves the dog and this evil birthday party clown who like alcoholic birthday party clown who claims ownership over the dog. And the judge says, well, I can't possibly decide who deserves to love this dog anymore. So they put the dog in the middle of the two people and they both like, come on, Air Bud, or, you know, come on, Bud. And then, oh my God, it's just like, I felt that back then.
Yeah,
I was old enough to feel it.
I'm tearing up thinking about it right now. It's so emotional.
It could be watched as a legal thriller, it sounds like. But,
let's hope that we get that same kind of tug on our heartstrings for Gus. We're going to learn about Yugoslavia. We're going to learn about mules. We're going to learn about Don Knotts. This is an old Don Knotts movie.
That's a pleasant surprise.
There's some really, really solid old actor cameos in this, so a lot to watch out for. So let's get it started. So I know I said I wasn't going to complain about the production value, but holy shit. I mean, that was like a rough 13 minutes there. That the beginning of this movie was difficult to get through.
The opening soccer scene, I thought you had pulled up something that like someone had spliced themselves into it, where because it's so heavily green screen and you just get someone popping right into your face.
Yeah, that sound effect, it's like, it's very clearly the whoop. Like, it's one of those, like, I can almost imagine the, like, little device that you use to make that noise. And it's just, you know, clearly this is not at all fit with the sound that's actually happening right now. But anyway.
So the basic story here is that there's a kid whose older brother is a Yugoslavian soccer hero and that his parents love and adore very much. He is sort of a dunce, which was illustrated by him juggling a soccer ball and falling into the well. And then the dad says something like, I hate my unathletic son, you know, and then he's like, I need to get out of here. And then that's when he sees Gus, his mule, start just rocking these soccer balls 100 yards into the distance. And then flash forward to Thousand Oaks, California, where the secretary of the California Adams, this ragtag football team, gets a Yugoslavian newspaper.
From her parents? Or like wherever she lives. Like she just happened to have one in her home in Thousand Oaks, California.
Why not? And reads about, this is a front page story in the Yugoslavian news about this soccer kicking mule. And so the team has attendance problems. They have personnel issues. They have all these things, and so the decision has been made, 10 minutes into the movie to just sign that mule. That's where we're going with this, basically.
Yeah, and I think we all kind of agree the early highlight is the fact that they have real uniforms on all these football teams. They open up with Coach Don Knotts watching some of the disappointing game film, if you're in, what are they, the California Adams.
Yeah.
I almost said the Adams, which is Revenge of the Nerds, coached by John Goodman. But real Packers uniforms, real Rams uniforms,
real Eagles.
Yeah. It was pretty impressive. And we all love the Adams look.
The California Adams uniforms, for those of you who obviously can't see, they're red and white. They're a white helmet with like the red Adam symbol on it. And then the jerseys are red, but they have lightning bolts in a circular kind of formation around the numbers. I mean, I would love it if my team wore those as like a third alternate.
The Chargers should absolutely wear those.
Absolutely.
Or at least the Chargers just need more lightning bolts on their uniform and they should model it after the Adams. It's, I don't know. They're great. The highlight of the movie so far.
Some early thoughts. The Adams are sort of getting themselves into some fairly dicey maternity policies and sexual harassment in terms of the cheerleaders. They've instituted a policy where if a cheerleader has a third child or is married for more than 10 years, they're going to be fired. So obviously, you know, that's something that probably, you know, can't do anymore unless, you know.
Well, I was going to say, it fits kind of well with the NFL.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe circa 2017.
Yeah. Yeah, we've read some stories. There's no, like, the marching band is bad. Like, everything's bad, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of where we're at right now. It's very gritty for Disney, though. Like, this is not polished in any way, shape, or form, I feel like.
I will say, I was reading the IMDb page, and they were saying the cheerleaders are ugly, the band is bad. the cheerleaders are not that are not ugly. Like, I was expecting them to, like, you know, make them look like the classic, like, geek nerd
braces,
female. Yeah, braces. Like, there is one girl who has braids and glasses, but they get out there and you know, the owner or someone goes, oh, like, show them your those flippy things you do. And she gets out there and is reeling off these amazing back handsprings. Like, normally you would think that she would try to do it and then fall.
Yeah.
Yes, she back handsprings into the drum of the band and kind of causes the whole marching band to collapse. But
not her fault.
I keep being pleasantly surprised by the cheerleaders.
Yeah. That was not on her, to be clear. Yeah. She was doing great.
That was the marching band's fault. Also, I like that the fact that a professional team has a marching band.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Very Giants. I think the New York Giants have a drum line. Mm-hmm. And then does another NFL team have a marching band?
Washington still has the band. That
they
that
have a
plays,
band,
right?
Too.
Oh,
right, yeah.
Yeah. I think it should be more. There should be more of them.
More
the
marching
NFL.
Bands. Let's say I could do some marching bands, you know. I don't know, Gary. What are your sort of super early takeaways on this?
Well, no. I think you pointed out the best athletic feat besides the flipping cheerleader, which is good, was the dad when the son falls into the well. He just, like, pulls him up,
no problem.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
like 170 pound
yeah.
dude. He's
like
just
a fully grown
yeah.
adult son in a wet mm-hmm. soaking wet in a well.
So you have a soccer star in the family, and the dad is just a Hulk. Like, it's an athletic family.
The dad also is pulling that out and goes, I have two heroes for something like this. He goes, I have two heroes for sons, one who's a soccer star and one who's a deep sea diver. And it's like, all right, man.
He thought of that quip while he was doing it.
Speaks to how, yeah, I mean, that's how it was back then, right? You worked all day in the field, you pulled your son out of wells, mm-hmm. you just told some jokes, and then you took care of your mule, your soccer star kicking mule. I think we can all kind of see where this is going. I mean, this is your fairly typical sort of ragtag story here. The Gus is going to come in and he's going to ignite the crowd. He's going to kick some footballs. What do we want out of the next little bit of this movie? I feel like to sort of get everybody into it.
I got to say, I'm really curious as to how they are going to cover an hour and 23 minutes here. Because I felt the point that we're at right now would be like the first half of the movie.
Mm-hmm. That is very true. They do seem to be moving very quickly. We're 13 minutes into the movie and we already know, like, who the player is that this team's going to sign. Player, animal, whatever. But play who this team's going to sign to try and improve them. But what other adversity is the team going to face? So,
although considering the length of the opening credits, maybe the end credits are just like
yeah,
45
the last, like,
minutes
20
themselves.
Minutes
we forgot
yeah.
to talk. So the opening credits of the movie were 9.5 minutes long, and we're at the 13-minute mark, and it was just like it was this casual conversation between Don Knotts and the team owner, and then it would just stop and list like half the production crew.
Yeah.
Like even the mule trainer gets like a opening credit in this movie. It's amazing.
They got a little too clever. It wasn't a terrible idea, but the execution didn't quite work. Ed Asner is the team owner, by the way.
That's Ed Asner?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess, you know, I would say that, like you, I have similar fears right now about, you know, like, where are we going with the rest of this movie?
We're 13 minutes in, and then we've yeah. seen half of it.
We've already hit the conflict resolution kind of arc here. Like, on a normal episode, this is kind of where we're an hour in, and Mark says that this movie sucks, yeah. and he doesn't want to watch it anymore. But we're already here at 13 minutes, so it's like, oh, boy. But this is, we're going to see what happens here. Maybe Gus will come in and turn this thing around. My one fear is that, you know, this movie was made in the 70s, and back then, even pre-CGI, whatever they do to kind of manipulate it to make it look like the mule is kicking the ball, probably a great thrill for people back then, you know, say, mm-hmm. oh, wow, look at this. Like, I could watch a donkey kick a football for an hour and 20 minutes, which might just be what we're in for here. Just a lot of
yeah.
just a lot of a donkey kicking a football.
There's going to be a 40-minute montage of dust kicking.
Maybe we should keep a tracker of, like, how many times do we see Gus actually kick the football?
That's good. Yeah, like, how many points has Gus scored?
Yeah, how many points has Gus scored? Keep it moving.
But we're doing this for you guys. You know, this is a public service in a way. We're reviewing Gus in a way that has not been reviewed before. So let's see what happens here when the mule gets to America. So I think of all the best cameos that I've ever seen in a bad football movie, this has got to be one of them. The guy, this is like 20 years before Happy Gilmore, the giant guy that tells Shooter McGavin, "And I'll be seeing you in the parking lot," just appeared in this movie. That is awesome. Holy crap.
Can we talk about how he appeared? Yeah, that was pretty hilarious.
Let's set the stage here. I think we're starting to figure out what is going to carry this movie underneath the sort of the gimmick of this mule kicking field goals. So Dick Butkus has a much larger acting role in this movie than I expected. He is like the boyfriend of the secretary who discovered the mule, but now that the mule and Andy have come over to America and have become this overnight success, the secretary seems to be leaning more towards Andy, the mule's handler, and so the mule got sick. She had to cancel a date with Dick Butkus, and then the two of them decided to go to a drive-in movie together. Dick Butkus is enraged, flies into the drive-in theater, thinks he catches them making out in the car, rips the cover off of like a soft-top Volkswagen Beetle, and outsteps this man. What is his name?
Richard Kiel. You're already pretty old if you remember Happy Gilmore that well, but he played Jaws in the Bond series back in the 70s.
Oh.
But he, I do enjoy that Butkus mistook him, this 7'6" gigantic man for the, 5'10", 170 pound Andy.
Yeah.
And I really like Dick Butkus's wardrobe and hair. He's got he's got very young Bieber hair on Dick Butkus, and look it up for yourself. You'll enjoy it.
It's like a young Bieber hair, and then like a Mr. Rogers sort of sweater combo, but it's all far too big for him, and he's already a big man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just it leads me to wonder, like in wardrobe, if they were just like, just take whatever's in there. You know, like we're not gonna finance a wardrobe for this, so we'll just wear what you brought from home, or here's a box of clothes over here.
Very pastel too.
It's like a very much like a Chargers powder blue is the color of the sweater that he's wearing. I'm reading Richard Kiel's Kiel. I don't actually know what his name is.
I think it's Kiel. But...
Kiel, that's fine. Richard Kiel's Wikipedia page. He was also in the original The Longest Yard. And if you remember, we watched the remake of The Longest Yard on this very podcast a couple weeks ago. But
so he was probably that giant guy, right?
He must have been one of the guys in jail who came out for the team. I'm going to try and dig a little bit more and figure out what his role was in the original version of The Longest Yard. But
yeah, so I mean, you know, I think that the best part of this movie for me, it has been like these like the dialogue is very bad, but sometimes it's so bad that it's amazingly hysterical. Like, so Andy gets a letter from his parents from Yugoslavia, and you know, his friend is like, "Well, does the letter mention you at all?" And then he finally says at the end, "Yes, they said that they could not read my news clipping because it was covered in caviar from my brother's celebration." And that's it. Like, oh my God, his parents are so bad, but so is everything else. Yeah. You know?
I got a lot of questions about the newspaper distribution model in this movie. Yeah. Why did Debbie, if she had the original Yugoslavian paper, how did she not also get the paper that mentioned that Yugoslavia upset Brazil and that Andy's brother scored 4 goals?
Yeah,
shouldn't he have already known that before he got the mean letter from his parents?
That's true. This is probably like, because they said Andy's brother scored 4 goals in a win over Brazil. This is Pele era Brazil, no?
Yeah.
Right? Like early, like height of Pele era Brazil, right?
It's a huge upset, yeah.
Yeah. It's very clear that Andy has the younger child complex of like having to live in the shadow of his older brother, and his parents clearly remind him that his older brother is far superior, and I'm sure many people who have older siblings like that can relate to his constant feelings.
Put yourself in the parents' shoes, though, right? Your oldest son is a soccer hero, and that, and you're this Yugoslavian couple on this farm, and you've been brought into this world where caviar is apparently a possibility for you now. I mean, you know, you're not supposed to love any of your kids more than the other, but I would like, you know, that kid just a little bit more. And then the other one says, well, I'm forging my own path. I'm going to carve my own success story by flying this mule to America and holding footballs as he kicks them through. You know, I just don't think that's a way to win your parents back, because you're not really doing anything. You're holding the football for the mule.
You've almost embraced the black sheep role once you made that decision.
You're letting the mule shine over you. So,
and I also, that's the last thing I can say. When they went out for the first game, Andy runs off because he's too nervous to perform, but it's like, all you're doing is holding the ball. I guess he might pull a Tony Romo in the 2011 playoffs, but...
But Gus coaxes him back onto the field, like the mule, like it's nuzzles him, player, and and not only that, but when he asked the secretary of the football team out for a date, and she said no, she had a date with Dick Butkus, the mule flopped on the floor. Like, this is a trained mule. This is like a 500. I don't know how they're like 1,000 pounds.
That's a good question. Yeah. We'll look up
average mule weight 1970s. But like the once he finds out that Andy's girlfriend's got a date with Dick Butkus, this mule just flops on the ground and starts rolling around, which I did not know they were agile enough to do.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Fake sick, gets the vet to come, therefore canceling the date with Dick Butkus and bringing up the giant monster man from Happy Gilmore. What a ride we've been on so far here. You know?
That I got to say, that was a good patch right there. I'm optimistic again.
Yeah. I will say, I feel like they're moving from scene to scene very quickly in this movie. Like, a great scene that happened right after we restarted the movie was they had the mule coming over on the airplane.
Yes.
And they had the mule going through the airport. They showed, like, the outside of the airplane flying through the sky. And they had the mule, you know, sitting in a window seat. And then they had the mule going on one of those moving walkways in the airport. I feel like that, like, this airport scene of, like, moving this mule could have been like at least 5 minutes. And
oh, they could have gotten so much time out of that. Yeah.
And in the movie, it was like 45 seconds. I was really disappointed.
It just kind of lets you know, like, oh, we got so much plot to fit in. We gotta cut this one down, do a 15-second exchange.
But think about it. Like, this is the 70s where, you know, they have been trying to CGI their version of old CGIing a lot of things. But in order to get a mule on a moving walkway at the airport in this movie, you had to get a mule on a moving walkway. You know, like, imagine all the effort that went through, and they used 30 seconds of that in the movie. They're just like, nah, you know, this isn't that funny. But I thought it was hilarious.
Getting a mule onto an airplane. I mean, you know, obviously. But there would be other ways of transporting mules. But just the image of it makes me laugh.
So we leave you with this, that sort of the fulcrum of the movie here now, that the owner is in some sort of trouble financially, and the prop bet has been posited to him that if the hapless California Adams win the Super Bowl, he gets to keep the team, and if not, he has to give the team away. The Adams are already 0-1. They lost to the Cleveland Browns 41-0. I'm trying to think who would be a star of this, like a mid 70s Cleveland Browns. Like,
is that still Jim Brown era?
Would it have been? Probably right at the end of at the end of his run, but trounced by the pre-Baker Mayfield, Freddie Kitchens Browns.
we can say that for sure.
Pre-Belichick, pre-Kozar Browns. So they're 0-1, we'll see what happens here. They're ready for week two, and maybe, who knows? Maybe Gus will start kicking some field goals in the game. God, this movie... Rated G, as Gary just pointed out, just took us just a super dark turn, which I love. So the guy who's so Gus has propelled the Adams to first place, 10-1. They're reinventing the game. This is Chip Kelly era Eagles stuff. Like, nobody can stop the Adams. They're scoring like 36 points a game, 36 points a game. average, I think I looked up the average NFL possession, is you get about 12 possessions a game. They're kicking a field goal on literally every possession because Gus can hit from 100 yards, and you know, no one can stop him. However, there's now these hijinks to kidnap the mule before every game so that the nefarious people can gain control of the California Adams. But Gus is a sensation. There's a lot to take in here now. This has become a movie, you know?
This has, and we should, before we move on, just real quick, they did mention the weight of the mule.
Oh, they did. That's right.
Did you guys?
Dick Enberg announced it, didn't he?
1,300 pounds or something like that. So it's going to take a lot of vodka. I think that's one thing that's clear to get that mule drunk enough.
But we didn't mention it. The guy snuck into the barn where the mule is, and they're pouring vodka into his oats and into his water.
So the first time that they kidnapped the mule, they posed. It's the guy, Tom Bosley, the dad from Happy Days, is the criminal working on behalf of the guys who are trying to buy the Adams. And the first time they rigged this phony delivery company and then just drove the mule out into the middle of the desert during the game and then forced the mule to pull the car back because they ran out of gas. And now... there's like this military guard unit standing outside of the mule's stable, but somehow Tom Bosley, the shifty and agile, like 55-year-old Tom Bosley, sneaks in and just dumps a handle of vodka into the mule's water tank. I wanted to just record something before this. We're going to break in, obviously, when we see a wasted mule. I feel like that's like kind of on brand for this podcast, but like... just dark. I mean, it's just getting a little dark in here, you know?
Yeah. It's just, it feels like you feel a little sad for this horse. Like, all you want to do is just say, like, don't eat, don't drink, you know, don't do it. But of course, it's a mule. The mule doesn't know anything else. So I don't know. I guess we're going to see some wasted mule here.
Gary, as a one-time representative of PETA, what's your take so far in the handling of this mule?
We talked about this a little bit before we started taping. There were probably multiple mules.
There would have to be.
During the filming of this movie, so we'll see how it goes. And by the way, it's Tom Bosley, and it's Tim Conway, the late Tim Conway, comedic genius, is his partner in crime here. But it's time to worry. This is much more engaging than I anticipated. I'll say that.
I'm feeling a lot. Like I'm feeling like kind of emotional here. It's like I'm getting really tied into this about Gus because we have it paused here. It's Gus Day on the field. They have a big banner with Gus Day and you know Gus's head with his helmet and his ears sticking out of his helmet. The marching band is spelling out Gus, and all I can think about is that the mule drinking the vodka, and it's not going to be great.
Gus is just going to be hammered for his big day, you know?
I don't even want to watch it.
Some other subplots to just keep you updated on. Andy and Gus are on national television, and then they get the Yugoslavic family on television via satellite link, and they say, how proud of you of your other son. He's a hero in America. And, you know, again, given a chance to love his son, the dad says, no, my only hero is Stefan, the Yugoslavic soccer player. My other son is not a hero for just holding one finger on a ball, which I kind of agree with. I don't think the dad is wrong there. I just think he needs to be a better dad.
I do, and I gotta say, and I apologize again for referring to a visual here, but if you watch that scene when he pulls Stefan in, Stefan looks like Zac Efron as Ted Bundy and just has this really upsetting, like unsettling look on his face through that scene.
No, you know what he looks like? He looks like the guy from No Country for Old Men who kills people with the nail gun.
A mixture of that. Javier Bardem in No Country and then Efron as Ted Bundy.
I like that.
Combination of two serial killers. That's the son you're proud of.
So let's see what happens here. Tom Bosley, it's so funny, like if people just listen to this podcast like out of context and just dropped in 45 minutes in, we're just like, the dad from Happy Days has snuck a bottle of vodka into the mule tent, and now we'll see what happens because this donkey is definitely wasted before he goes out to kick these field goals. It's Gus Day. The Adams have sold out their stadium. Dick Enberg and Johnny Unitas on color commentary. Yeah. I mean, oh my God. That's, this is like...
And we all agree, Johnny Unitas is actually
funny.
Pretty good.
Good.
In this.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens.
no. Oh, he burnt. Look at that. The mule looks like he's going through like a DUI test. Oh. Oh no. It is a drunk mule. Wow. This is the 70s.
Oh no.
Holy shit.
I have one random quick point to make on Gus. Like, just the idea of, like if Bill Belichick figured out that, like, there was a field goal kicking mule and somehow, like, subverted the rules to get him on a roster, like, wouldn't you love the team that had the mule? Like, I would love that. They would immediately be my favorite team.
Oh, absolutely. Like, that, it would be must-watch television every time. This team would be on prime time every week just to see the damn horse come in and kick field goal. It's just, anyway.
And, right, you could pay him the league minimum, right? Yeah. He probably wouldn't, you know.
Be okay.
I just imagine, like, here at Sports Illustrated, like, okay, so whatever, the Patriots or the Eagles, they have this field goal kicking mule, and so what's the next thing is, you know, obviously one of us here at the MMQB has got to go to Yugoslavia and do a profile of Gus's origin story in the old country. I mean, there's a lot there, you know. I really like that.
Tortured origin story. It's rough.
So the Adams are going to the Super Bowl. I think what really carried the movie through that last hour, we're kind of hitting the final stretch here, was like there was like 8 or 9 different hijinks that they used to get this mule not at the games. And so the last one was that they lied about Debbie being in the hospital so that Andy had to go to the hospital. But they figure out at the end that Gus will also kick for Debbie. And now Andy is very upset because his dad is right. Just holding a ball for the mule is not special, and so he's down on himself. There's a lot of, like, you know, there's emotions here. There's, like, family resentment. There's some there. This movie's got a surprising amount of tentacles for a film, a G-rated film about a mule who kicks footballs.
This guy, yeah, and Andy's strangely unmoved by the fact that Debbie did not need a blood transfusion and was actually healthy. He was just really upset when he saw her.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Can we go back to when we saw right last time when we left off, we had someone pouring vodka into the mule's water and food, and then we knew it was coming up on Gus Day, and Gus comes in and he's kind of sidestepping back and forth. You can clearly see that the vodka was impacting him, and he kind of trips and knocks some things over. I was panicking. I was so worried that this mule was going to look foolish. All I wanted was for the mule to be the hero. But I will say it kind of ended up where the mayor was there to present him with the key to the city. The mayor and the mayor's wife were there to present the key to the city. And the mule comes in and kind of like comes up, like gets the mayor on his back, runs around. They kind of knock a bunch of things over. They knock the pyramid of cheerleaders over. But it ended up, you know, the mule kind of came out okay of that scene. Like, it ended up with the pyramid of cheerleaders was toppling, the banner was falling down, but the mule was just standing there next to Andy, and the two of them were like, well, all right, this whole thing's kind of falling apart. Sure, I'm drunk, but, you know. he turned out okay.
The question is, if you're Commissioner Goodell and you find out that Gus has been inhaling vodka-infused oats, you have no choice but to suspend him for 6 games, right?
I mean,
at the very least, he's in the program right now.
That's a substance abuse violation.
I will say, the Adams, not only as Connor mentioned earlier, ahead of the game on the analytics, nutrition. I mean, they had the oats in the lab immediately to see what their star player was putting into his body. This is a forward-thinking organization. Yeah.
Yeah, and we had made the joke earlier. It's like, you know, God, if only, you know, maybe the Bears will try this, and then they won't have to worry about all these other field goal kickers, and they can just make it from, it does it, what was it, 48-yard field goal that they, yeah. They can make it from 99 now.
So Kalen Kaler says too soon.
So what are our predictions here? I mean, there's a lot on the table here, but I feel like the movie's kind of grinding to an end. The Adams are going to the Super Bowl after beating the 1976 Rams, which had Jack Youngblood. Like, this was and Ron Jaworski. It's a really good Rams team, and I really wish Ron Jaworski was in this movie. where are we going from here? Like, what do we think is going to happen?
So they're playing. They're heading to the Super Bowl now because they won. Is that correct? They won. Yeah, they
beat
won
the Rams
15,
to go to the Super
beat
Bowl.
Beat the Rams. They won 15-14. I don't know. We have 35 minutes of the movie left. Like, I guess they go, like, my prediction is that, I don't know. Do you have any good predictions, Gary? I got to think about this for a second.
I mean, Andy has to be redeemed or get over his self-esteem issues in some way, shape, or form. I'm not sure exactly how they set that up. I'm guessing he and Dick Butkus have to make up in the end, but...
See, I think he has to, right, you have to take out Dick Butkus, right? Because this is the 70s, right? It's not like a we're all going to get along thing. It's like I have to out-masculine you, right? Don't you think that there's probably something going on there?
I think that's where they're... I don't know. I feel like that's where they're going to, where he earns the respect of Dick Butkus and his father and hopefully the Happy Gilmore guy as well. Yeah. Hopefully
and
he reappears.
We'll have something where the owner comes back and the owner wins his bet because he won the Super Bowl. Yes. I guess my prediction is they win. They must win the Super Bowl. The owner redeems himself. Maybe he signs this mule to a 10-year extension. I don't know. Like, maybe the horse is just going to, or maybe the mule is going to, you know, he'll be part of the team for the rest of eternity.
Flash forward to free agency 2019, and the mule is pulling a Robbie Gould and holding out for a 4-year contract extension.
They've tagged the mule.
What a headline.
Mule tagged. All right, let's see what happens here. My guess is hopefully Tom Bosley is done trying to steal this mule. I'm pretty done with that. There was like 7 or 8 tries there. Let's get Andy and Debbie back together. Let's get Don Knotts a Super Bowl ring. let's put a bow on this thing. So let's do this. Can you imagine covering a Super Bowl where so Gus has been kidnapped? You made a great point, Gary, in that, like, the mule switch feels like that was, you know, it was coming.
I mean, it was the most obvious one all along. It finally got there.
Should have started with that.
They kidnapped the mule and snuck him into a hotel room and then delivered a replacement mule to the Adams in the middle of the Super Bowl. And now when Gus heard Andy say Oyich on TV, he kicked his way out of the hotel room and is escaping somewhere, running down the middle of the street in the middle of the Super Bowl. So a lot of chaos going on right now. Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine what the internet would do right now if the Super Bowl was going on and there was a mule just running loose in California or wherever they are? I don't know where the Super Bowl is taking place. We'll say California. Like, think about when, you know, you see like an escaped llama or something running around there, you know, an escaped animal of sorts. The internet freaks out. If that happens simultaneously to the Super Bowl, I think it would break. So
imagine if someone kidnapped even the other team's kicker, and then there's just like Sebastian Janikowski running down like Sepulveda Boulevard in LA. Like, you know, like, it's the real Sebastian Janikowski, and he's coming to the game. Oh my God. I will say, you know, we're rounding down here, and one of the most consistent bits in this movie has been, like, they've paired Johnny Unitas as, like, a straight man for this ridiculous color commentator kind of guy, and he's just nailing it, like, scene after scene after scene. Johnny Unitas is maybe the funniest part of this movie.
It's a lot of reaction shots, too, so it's not even like he's just reading great lines. He's just, this is a fine acting job by Johnny U.
Does everyone's predictions kind of still stand here? I mean, I feel like we're about to find out what happens here. I mean, obviously they find the mule. Gus's parents or Andy's parents are starting to waver a little bit. Like, maybe my son actually isn't a total dolt. You know, maybe there's something there. So it seems like everything's kind of coming around, right? I mean, I think we all kind of feel the same way there.
I'm still just kind of wondering what's going to push his parents over the edge as far as now respecting him? Is he going to have to do something besides hold the ball on the final kick or something like that? Are they going to run a fake field goal?
And he does something?
I don't know.
There might be something where he's going to find Gus here. Maybe he brings Gus in some big crazy manner, and I don't know. The two of them are going to, maybe they've only kicked field goals this entire time. Maybe Gus runs it back for a touchdown, wins the game.
Yeah, just put the ball in Gus's mouth. Who's going to tackle that
thing? Exactly. You know? Score more than 3 points. I think Gus has the ability to score more than 3 points.
Here's a question that I will leave you both with before we go back. So you're an NFL general manager, and your team has fired its head coach in the offseason. Do you hire Don Knotts off of his Super Bowl season to try to poach him away, or are you scared that the mule has been too responsible for his success?
There's a on one hand, Don Knotts, as we saw very early in the movie, he works on Coughlin time. He showed up a day earlier than camp actually opened and started to run a practice without players.
Extremely great point.
That was some Jerry Jones, Jason Garrett stuff as far as Gus goes. I think it's clear that the front office is sort of pulling the strings here.
Yeah.
He had no hand in getting Gus. He just kind of showed up at practice one day and was like, oh, a mule who can kick field goals. Great. Putting you in.
And as Connor has mentioned, he's just so coked up.
Yeah.
I love that in the 70s, like every adult man looked like a high school football coach, and they picked the one fucking guy who does not look like a football coach. It's just like an insane Don Knotts looking guy. It's just funny though, like, you know, you imagine just like covering the NFL on a day-to-day basis though, and like, what if, like, you know, another coach takes over the Adams and just like, yeah, just puts the ball in the mule's mouth and lets him run it in, and then someone asks Don Knotts like, why didn't you guys just run it? You could have been scoring 7 points every time instead of just 3. Oh man, that would have been really funny.
We've had a couple of like pretty funny moments in the last like 20 minutes or so. Like the two guys who stole Gus went to this like hotel room, and they like put Gus in between the two beds as they climbed in for bed, but then Gus got into bed with one of them and essentially kicked the guy out, and you see this scene of, you know, the guy sitting or lying on the floor trying to sleep, and Gus is just all spread out in the bed, looked very comfortable. And there was also a moment where, for whatever reason, I found this to be fairly funny, but they were putting Gus into an elevator, and they were trying to hide him from the guy who worked the front desk. And this woman comes in with her husband, with a man, and she's wearing this hat with fruit on it. And Gus starts eating the hat. And eventually she walks out, and Gus still has the hat.
Liked how much you liked that part. I think that was like my favorite part of this.
It was Bet did lose it there. And that added a little more enjoyment to it. That was a good scene,
though. Funny.
there's been some solid, like, I mean, there's obviously the stuff that we find funny in hindsight, or because it's so bad, or because like they're like these painful non sequiturs that are just totally meaningless. But there's also some solid, wholesome, like just general good animal humor in here, you know, like just some good old fashioned animal jokes.
There have been no ass jokes yet. Like, isn't the mule?
Wow,
the ass,
that's a good point.
The donkey, the mule, the ass. I don't know. I guess a donkey is an ass. The donkey to the mule to the horse. But
still, they're leaving that on the table.
Yeah, there's no. I mean, I guess this is a G-rated movie, so
it's a farm animal. You could poop on things. I mean,
there's
possibilities
there
here.
I mean, we still have 20 minutes left, so
that is true. I didn't want to say it out loud because I felt foolish in retrospect, but during the drunk scene, I thought he was going to vomit.
There were a lot of sound effects. Like, the horse was hiccuping,
burping,
yeah, hiccuping. The tongue was out for a little bit, so you're like, oh my god, is this mule gonna vomit all over everyone? But the mule held it together.
I just love thinking about, like, when, you know, everyone at Disney gets together and they're, like, storyboarding this thing. And they're like, okay, guys, we got a donkey that kicks field goals from the Eastern Bloc of Europe. during the Cold War, like, just go. Let's see. Like, what do we got? You know,
we need about an hour 15 of padding here, and
don't worry, we have 20 minutes of opening credits, and then the rest is just on you guys. You know,
see, that's the thing that also I find interesting, because like the scene where Gus was getting into the bed. Like, that was a fairly long scene, along with the, but you didn't need that to continue the plot.
No.
Same with the mule eating the hat, but also the scene with the mule on the airplane could have been so much longer. You could have had 30 seconds. You could have had the camera pan to just the mule lying in bed, and then you would get a laugh out of that, but then spent taking those 2 minutes and put it to the airplane. I don't know. Anyway, call me up if you want me to direct your next movie.
I think both of you make a solid point that you left a lot of mule hijinks on the table here, but again, we're winding down here to the dramatic conclusion. They're searching for the donkey somewhere on the streets of Los Angeles. He is loose. It's halftime of the Super Bowl, so I don't know. I have no idea where it's going to go from here. That scene was 10 fucking minutes long. Holy shit.
We're all so tired of being at the damn supermarket. Get us out of the supermarket.
I would have respected if they just rolled credits just right after that going. Scene.
All right, so Gus escapes the hotel where he's being held by these people and seems to be running with purpose towards the stadium. And, you know, there's only 10 minutes left of this movie. And so we're thinking, okay, fine. Like, he's going to go back and he's going to kick a field goal. 12 fucking minutes of Gus just donkey hijinks in a supermarket, like, had nothing to do with anything. And all these shoppers just going about their day shopping, and there's a mule in the store. And, like, you know, three different times they fully set up this bit where this guy neatly stacks a thing of cans, and then they knock it over, and then neatly stacks a thing of plates, and they knock it over, and then neatly stacks a bunch of cakes, and they knock it over. And it's like, holy shit, did they just, like, run out of stuff to do?
Like, I could definitely say, like, Tom Bosley and Tim Conway, that's like getting Will Ferrell and like, John C. Reilly back in the day. And, like, yeah. All right, we're going to do, like, a 12-minute scene of them trying to catch a mule in a grocery store, and we'll just see how it goes. And,
oh, my God. It was just, like, it reminded me of, like, of Home Alone, where the kid is just setting up the two guys who are coming after or trying to break into the house over and over and over. And just the mule would knock a bag of flour on them. He would buck one guy into a basket of tomatoes, and then the mule would step on a bottle of ketchup and it would spray all over them.
There was 2.5 minutes of ketchup and mustard on the floor, and the donkey stepping on ketchup and mustard, and it just spraying in Tom Bosley's face.
Oh, that scene, if you remember the classic Simpsons scene where Sideshow Bob is stepping on the rakes.
That's
what that was.
Yeah,
like, if you think about it, this scene was longer than, like, all along the Watchtower. Like this is how fucking long that scene was. If you're thinking about, like, the relative length of an hour and a half movie, this is a large percentage of this movie has nothing to do with it. We still have no idea. Like, the Super Bowl is theoretically over. I mean, they're still looking for him, but, like, he just ran with such purpose into the supermarket, and then they just totally lost us there. That, to me, honestly, like, you know, we normally drink during these things. Like, imagine, like, just, you know, having, like, a few edibles and watching this. Like, this movie would just be totally outrageous. Like, it would be one of the greatest things of all time.
Yeah.
Gotta get some edibles, put Hendrix on, and mash it up with that scene. See if it syncs up.
Oh, my gosh. There are so many situations in which I want to watch this movie. Just like, you know what?
Anyway. The question that remains for all of us, though, was the aisle. With the cake mix and diapers is the aisle. Were 70s grocery stores just different?
They just had all kinds of stuff all over the place. Nothing was organized, you know?
Whatever. Just throw
just
it up
put
there.
The diapers next to the cake mix. It's totally fine.
We got everything pretty well organized in the store. All we got left is cake mix and diapers. Like, yeah, I don't know. Just put them in the little organic aisle.
It's just, even the people who were shopping were just, like, continuing to go along their day. Like, this guy lands into a basket of tomatoes, and they're over here picking out their bananas. Like, it's just, nothing is... There were no police calls. I mean, maybe there were some police calls. I don't know. Just, oh my goodness.
But there was even, we were like 8 minutes in and we're like, okay, now people are starting to panic. And then 2 minutes later, just like, no, they're done panicking. They've all come to terms with the mule in the store now.
Oh my God. I don't even know what to think. I mean, and then it culminates obviously with Tom Bosley doing a front flip into the lobster tank.
Yeah.
Classic hijinks. I will say there were some solid moments there. I mean, if you like the Three Stooges kind of gag deal, I mean, this was it. This was your payoff. Did not expect it to be half of the movie. But
in a supermarket, like, I don't, whatever.
So literally, like, so they have not resolved Andy's relationship with his parents. They have not resolved the issue with the team. Dick Butkus is on the other team and they haven't mentioned it. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of the Super Bowl and like there's like 80 different like loose limbs here that we have to tie up, and you know, but let's just fuck around in a supermarket for 12 minutes. All right. They're in a helicopter. They're going to find Gus. We'll see what happens.
Oh, yes.
They airlifted the donkey to the game.
Oh my God.
In a helicopter. This is the best football movie that we have ever seen on this podcast.
Wow.
And they're just gonna drop him right into the stadium. That is a donkey being carried by a helicopter.
Also, why? Oh, I guess it's a little raining. Okay.
You can't fake that. That's legitimately a donkey being carried by a helicopter.
I also awesome. Like how like a patch is super muddy and the patch is perfect right there. Like, but.
Best football movie ever.
That was a great football movie.
And we all learned a lesson in the end, which is that special teamers are not real football players.
Oh, wow.
Where to start? Okay, so plot-wise, I mean, they get Gus back in time for the second half. He kicks a bunch of field goals, but then they're still down one. And then Gus slips on the last kick over 100 yards, and Andy, who needed to learn to believe in himself all along, takes the ball 50 yards and then just gives up and throws it in the air, but then somehow gets it back and runs it the rest of the way in, learning about himself. His dad is proud. He says, "My son is a real hero." And then, and now we're here. So, yeah, this is, I thought it was fantastic. And in a weird way, everything about it was great.
Yeah, I'm feeling very uplifted, very optimistic about the rest of my day. Like, you know, it's a feel-good movie. Connor, do you want to start with how they got Gus to the football stadium?
So I recorded all of us just watching the donkey come down in the helicopter, like, because we're all like, oh yeah, they have a helicopter. How are they going to get the donkey in? And like, again, this is the 70s. You cannot computer animate this. They strapped the donkey onto the bottom of a helicopter and they airlifted him into a stadium. This is a thing that happened in the movie. Oh, like, the budget for this seems like such a low budget movie, but when you consider the actors of the time, on Gus Day, when they had a Gus celebration, there was a 30-foot high mechanical donkey that someone had to build for this movie. You know, I mean, these were legitimate props, and then you airlifted a donkey into a stadium. Just unbelievable.
And I just want to point out, on the other end of this, and maybe you guys could correct me, there was a very brief scene earlier in the movie where Andy's being hidden away in it's the owner's like cabin in the hills.
Yeah.
They green screened that. They didn't even like bother going to something that looked like a cabin. It's just a green screen cabin scene behind him for the 8 seconds when he's just talking on the phone to Debbie or whatever that scene was.
Yeah.
They they chose to spend on interesting things and cut costs in, in some other spots that...
It's very similar to their, like, they chose to spend a lot of time in the fucking supermarket, and they chose to spend zero time on the airplane over from Yugoslavia. So, you know, pick and choose your spots to spend money, to spend time in the movie, whatever.
I would say that this would be a top 10... okay, so it fits the bad football movie genre. It's a bad movie, but it is a great bad movie. Like, I just think it's, like, it's so weird, and it's weird for, I still think a kid would like this movie, a kid today would like this movie, and I also think a stoned adult would love this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it checks a lot of boxes.
Yeah, it's somewhere between PG and PG-13. Like, I don't think I'd show my kids this movie. Yeah.
That was going to be my follow-up question. Yeah. Would you show your kids?
It's not a true G.
Oh, no, not at all.
No.
But ratings were weird back then. Yeah. There were weird movies that were to have, like, PG ratings that are like...
Is there nudity? No. Yeah. G. Go ahead. Whatever.
I just want to touch on one more miscellaneous scene that we didn't mention earlier was the concussion scene where they have to bring Andy out in the stretcher. He's been Dick Butkus, still his teammate at that point, has targeted Andy as he sits on the bench without a helmet and dives into him, knocks him over, concusses him. They brought Andy out on a stretcher, and he couldn't even. They just dropped him on the field. He couldn't. He not only could not stand, he couldn't sit up, so he had to lie down. And I guess just a little bit of respect for the long snapper for the entire operation through all these things.
Got no credit in this.
So yeah. Relying on and I think the last thing I'll say on this podcast, that actor's name is Gary Grimes, which is my college nickname. So.
Oh,
it wasn't.
Used to be called Gary.
No.
All right. Yeah.
But I'm proud. One of the good Garys.
Yeah, it's a good Gary. Yeah, I mean, I just think front to back, like, I was a little nervous. Again, I think I've said this on the podcast before. Like, you know, when you pick a movie and you screen a movie and then you ask your coworkers to spend a portion of their day watching this movie, it feels like a little bit like you're inviting people over to your house to watch a movie, and their good time is incumbent on the movie being good. 10 minutes in, I was freaked out. I was a little bit worried about this. I was like, this is not going to be a good movie. And then it took off from there. I mean, mm-hmm. So my advice to anybody watching this is just stick with it, you know?
Yeah.
Just stick with it. I don't know. Any parting thoughts? I mean, I would love to see an animal kicker in the NFL. I think that's an entirely different podcast. But I don't know. I loved it. I would give it a 10 out of 10. The one thing I did want to mention was I went to IMDb and I like to read the user reviews. Mm. This is a completely serious 9 out of 10 star review from January of 2012. Headline, tremendous success story. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my God. But yeah, I the worst best Disney movie ever made. This movie is literally an ass kicking football movie. And then another 6 out of 10 review is just says, a mule is an animal with long, funny ears.
I did appreciate how they did come in like halfway through the movie when Gus started, you know, gaining steam. Everyone was supporting him. And everyone came in with those with these hats with giant mule ears on
Dick
them.
Enberg wore a donkey hat for like 20 minutes
so
in this movie.
Oh, man. Johnny Unitas got his moment at the end when the other guy, whose name is Pepper, Pepper was screaming about something or another, and he was trying to clear his throat, and then Johnny Unitas just came in and had his moment when the other guy couldn't, when Pepper had no voice to speak on the game.
Yeah, Pepper Gus Johnson out of that.
Yeah, he had a hard moment.
One more great IMDb headline. One of the great family movies of all time, and then in all caps, warning, spoilers ahead. Okay, oh, no, I don't know what I would have done.
I'm glad that guy is concerned about not spoiling the movie for everybody.
Most of the time we are in mixed company. There's good football movies, bad football movies, but I think we're in agreement here. This is 6 thumbs up, right?
Six thumbs up for this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, can it Roger it Ebert, who crushed this movie in the Tribune, by the way. I read they have the original review. Ooh. In the, should we read like a...
Come on, Raj.
Dude, he just destroyed this movie in the Chicago Tribune.
There are a lot of things that like you can destroy about the movie, but you can also, there's a lot of things to really like about the movie. And if you choose to focus on the things that you really like, it's an enjoyable movie. Like, I would go home and watch this movie again. I don't know.
July 13th, 1976.
Oh, there we go.
Two stars from Roger Ebert. There are two different kinds of movies that have been coming out of the Walt Disney Organization in the last few years. Inventive, entertaining fantasies like Escape to Witch Mountain and Island at the Top of the World, and dreary retreads of tired old Disney formulas. Gus, alas, is a retread.
Mm.
Just, wow, he goes on. God, people had unlimited space in newspapers back then. I'm not even allowed to write this long online. But yeah, all right. Well, thanks, guys, for coming in, doing this. Bad Football Movies is going to be back for the remainder of the summer. We have a very special episode coming next week with the original co-founder, Jonathan Jones, is coming back to New York.
Woo.
Let's go. We're going to be trashed.
That one.
Woo!